This podcast is an unscripted, unedited conversation about true crime. We take the cases very seriously, but I don't take myself seriously at all, and neither should you. Welcome to Wife of Crime.
So, Russ, today on the podcast, I wanted to find a story that incorporates both of our interests. And I think I found a case that does just that. Billy was an MLB prospect who was about to be signed as a pitcher with the Detroit Tigers. But a series of unfortunate events would end up changing his life forever. This is the case of Billy Dillon and James Dvorak. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Wife of Crime, a true crime podcast where I tell Russ, my husband, true crime stories, and he reacts to them in real time.
Yep. the real time threw me off.
Sorry. We just sit at our kitchen table, and I tell him stories, and he has interesting commentary.
Yep, we just chop it up. It's interesting to some people, and some people hate me.
No, I don't. Well, some people don't like you. Are a little bit of a polarizing figure, I have to say. Like, I'm learning that people really like you, or they're like really not about it. But luckily, I love you. I really like you.
I think you love me. I don't think you like me.
That's not true. I like you too. Sometimes you're annoying, but I mean, any husband and wife that are listening right now will agree sometimes you just really get on each other's nerves. It's the way it is.
Yeah, I think some people don't like me probably because I don't care what people think.
Yeah, you really don't care what anyone thinks at all.
And I think it's kind of funny when people roast me too.
Well, I have a story for you today that I think you'll find really interesting because it incorporates murder and baseball.
Okay.
So,
I'm curious if I know this story now.
You don't. You don't know the story. This actually isn't a very well-known story, but I found it really interesting because it has a lot of interesting elements to it. And I thought you'd like it because there's a little tiny bit of baseball that I'm going to talk about in the beginning.
Oh, that sounds like a trick.
No, it's not a trick. I mean, it's not a lot. It's not all about baseball, but I do talk about it a little bit in the beginning. So I thought you'd find it cool.
All right.
So this is the case of Billy Dillon.
I know this story.
You do?
Just kidding.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say that would have ruined the whole episode. The whole episode would have been ruined because we like when you don't know the story because then, you know, your comments are better.
The only one I kind of knew some of was the Ed Kemper one because I watched the Mindhunter show.
Oh, that's true. That is pretty much the only one out of all 40 episodes we have that you knew the story ahead of time.
I feel like someone's always going to die in an episode, so I kind of know that.
That's true. Unfortunately. Unless we have to do the Survivor ones. The Survivor ones,
you know. Oh, that's true.
We've done three.
Yeah, shout out to the Survivors.
Yeah, shout out to them.
I'll have a sip for you right now.
So this is the case of Billy Dillon. On August 22nd, 1981, Billy Dillon and his half-brother Joe were hanging out in Joe's car smoking some pot. They sat in his brother's Monte Carlo in the Canova Beach parking lot pre-gaming before heading to Billy's favorite bar called The Pelican. Like any typical guy in his early 20s, Billy was just loving life. He was working during the day and partying even harder at night. But tonight was actually something special. Billy had gotten some really exciting news earlier in the day. And this was an even bigger party, and it was kind of a celebration of sorts. Billy found out earlier that day that the Detroit Tigers wanted to sign him.
Oh, wow. That is big news. For a boy, you dream of that your whole life.
Exactly. So Billy was a pitcher.
Yankees, sign me.
So Billy was a pitcher, and according to friends and family, he was a hell of a baseball player, and he had dreams of playing major league ball.
When you say in baseball, when you say hell of a, you're supposed to say hell of a. It's supposed to be one word.
Oh, sorry.
Like he's a hell of a ball player.
Sorry, he's a hell of a ball player. Did I say it like you? Hell of a ball player.
I don't know. When you do my accent, it's annoying. Because I'll do yours.
He was a hell of a ball player. And Russ, can't you ever do the dishes and help me?
Okay, shut up. So now, a couple weeks prior, Billy had attended an open tryout that the Tigers were holding in Cocoa Beach. Throughout high school, Billy's family moved around a lot because his father was in the Air Force. So he never got a chance to play varsity baseball, and he never got any attention from scouts. So when Billy's father heard they were holding this open tryout, so apparently like back then, before there was all these computerized scouting and everything, they had open tryouts a lot. I read this earlier when I was reading about this case. So his father found out about these open tryouts, made a bunch of phone calls, and somehow got his son an invitation.
Okay.
So Billy stood 6'4". He was muscular, and he threw a 90 mile per hour ball no problem.
Was he lefty or righty?
No idea. I didn't even know to like look that up.
Well, normally, because like if you're a lefty and you're a pitcher, it's so much easier to make a team. So if he was a lefty and he could throw 98, he was going to make it 100%. Even if he sucked, they would have been like, we'll teach you how to do it.
Well, he apparently showed off. I don't know what any of these words mean. So maybe you can enlighten us all, because I'm sure a lot of the 80% of our listeners who are women might not know this either. Some of them might.
So I think us dudes, we're just not going to tell any girls that are sitting next to us, and we're going to let you all be in the dark.
Well, apparently he showed off a slider, changeup, a decent curveball, and a split finger fastball.
Oh, those are just good pitches. You know, different pitches move differently. Some will move towards you, some will move away, some will sink. A changeup is just like a slower pitch that you throw to throw the batters off after you've been throwing other pitches.
Oh, okay. So now, apparently, the split finger fastball was a pitch that was starting to become really popular at the time, because this was 1981.
Yeah. Best year of all time.
Oh, yeah. That's the year you were born. So now, when the Tigers called, they told him they wanted to sign him and start him in their farm system in Lakeland, Florida, where they had spring training and they had a team in the winter league. So this was like life-changing news for Billy. And this joint they were smoking in the Canova Beach parking lot, this was a celebratory joint. So they were like in the best mood, listening to music, hotboxing in the car, ready to go out and party. So the two men were laughing and listening to a bunch of music, and then all of a sudden they see a man and woman walking straight toward their car. As they came closer, Billy noticed badges and realized these two are Brevard County detectives.
Ah, and they're definitely going to pull up like, you young kids smoking dope?
Well,
that's
Billy...
old folks call weed.
Well, Billy thought that, so he quickly put out the joint and hid it in his hand, and he kept his hand down trying to conceal the joint the whole time. The male detective knocked on the window and his brother rolled it down. And although a bellow of smoke poured out of the driver's side, like making it super obvious that the two were in there hotboxing, Billy assumed they were going to get arrested for this. He was like, that's it. I'm done. My chances of getting on this team are done. It's over.
Yeah. Sports teams don't want to deal with a lot of nonsense.
But the detective seemed unfazed and instead began asking the two guys if they knew anything about a murder that had taken place on the beach 5 days earlier. Billy was kind of part nervous from having the joint in his hand, and he was also anxious because he was probably a little high at the time. So he just looked at the detective and he said, no, I mean, I just know that it happened right there. And he pointed at the beach, but his hand was really shaky.
Mm.
So his voice kind of shook and his hand shook and he was noticeably nervous, which kind of threw the detectives off. They were like, why is this kid so nervous about this if he knows nothing?
Well, the weed smoke just came out of the car and you go to jail back then, or maybe.
Well, they look suspiciously at one another. And then the female detective said, well, how do you know it happened over there? And Billy couldn't remember. He told them, well, I just think I saw some yellow tape, or, you know, maybe I saw a picture of the crime scene in the paper. Because the murder, it wasn't a secret or anything. It was all over the papers and on the evening news. But this statement, quote, I can't remember, would sadly change Billy's life forever. The agents took his picture and personal information. They asked if he could come to the station, but Billy declined. He was still holding that joint in his hand, and plus, he didn't even know anything about this murder. So he was like, you know what? I'm not going to go spend hours in this police station and talk to these people. I don't know anything about this. I want to go party and celebrate this opportunity that I got.
If they say, can you come to the station, you're supposed to say, eat a dick.
Well, so he didn't go. But the police pressed him, and they were like, okay, cool. You don't want to come tonight? How about you come first thing in the morning?
Nah.
At this point, Billy's high was wearing off, and he was just getting annoyed. So he said yes, just so they would leave him alone. So
that's like me and you. You're like, can you do this? Can you do this? I'm like, okay. And then, can you do this? Then I'm like, all right, yes, 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 I'll just do it. And then I don't do it.
You're so nice. Anyway, so then detectives, said, all right, cool. Come by tomorrow and we'll get this sorted out and we'll talk about it. So Billy agreed and the detectives left. And the brothers, they light their joint back up. They chill in the car for a little longer, and then they drive off to the Pelican Bar and hang out for the entire night.
It's a little fishy that they didn't bother them for smoking weed back then.
Well, I think they had bigger fish to fry at the moment. The weed wasn't the main priority, I guess. So now, 2 days went by. Billy started hearing that the cops were asking about him around town because he never showed up. Like, the morning came and went, and he never went to the police station.
He was hungover.
Yeah.
He smelled like weed. He might have been with a girl.
Exactly. So he never went to the police station, and now 2 days go by, and he starts hearing that they're looking for him, and they're talking to people about him. And they even are showing people his picture, which he's like, wait, okay, maybe I need to go to the police station. Maybe I need to clear all this nonsense up. Because now, the fact that I didn't go, now they're suspecting me even more that I had something to do with this. So let me just go talk to them. We'll clear it up.
Oh, man.
So he went alone with no attorney. He didn't need one. He literally knew nothing about this murder. So he waived his Miranda rights.
You need one?
And told cops.
Because they'll pin stuff on you.
That's true. But in his mind, he's 21 years old. He goes, I don't need an attorney. I didn't have anything to do with this. So he goes to the police station.
And he can't afford one, probably. Not everyone could afford a lawyer.
That's true.
But yeah. I think if you say, I need a lawyer, they have to get, like, a legal aid.
Well, yeah, you have to get a public defender or whatever.
Yeah, and then they'll come in, and they'll be like, what did you say? Don't say nothing. And then they get mad at you, like the TV.
Well, he waived his Miranda rights. He walked in, and he said, just ask me anything you need to know. Let's clear this up. So, question number one, where were you on the night of August 17th? August 17th? I don't know. That was Billy's initial response.
How long ago was that?
It was 10 days before this day that they were asking him this.
I don't know what I did yesterday.
Exactly. So, his initial response was, I don't know. Because he partied a lot. You know, his nights were all the same. He hung out with the same people. He went to the same places. He goes, well, I know that I hang out with these people all the time. So I can give you a list of names and you can talk to them and I can tell you where I probably was. But I can't definitively say this is where I was on this day.
And you should ask them back. Where were you August 17th? Can you remember?
Exactly. Like, I was thinking about it when I was writing this. Today is April 25th. If someone just asked me, where were you on April 15th? First of all, I have to think, what day of the week was that?
I don't know what today's day of the week is. We don't leave the house.
It's true. We're in a quarantine, so.
What month is this? I don't even know.
So, yeah, he had no idea. He had no idea what happened on that day and where he was. So let's talk about what actually happened on the night of August 17th. And the murder that I keep referring to.
It was a girl they said died, right?
It wasn't a girl. It was a man.
Oh, well. That's good. I mean, it's not good, but we always get girls dying on this show.
That's true. But this one was a man. His name was James Dvorak, and he was a 40-year-old man. He was found naked and beaten to death on Canova Beach. So he had significant facial trauma. Although the murder weapon was unknown, based on the evidence at the scene, police suspected that both fists and possibly a tree branch was the murder weapon, was the thing they bludgeoned him with. Well, they found bark inside his mouth and embedded in his lips. So that's why they thought a tree branch.
Beat his face in, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, he had significant trauma. He was almost unrecognizable, mainly just trauma to the face and head. His body was found laying near a spot where a lot of gay men used to hang out and look for prospects. And they used to call this Queer Pier back in the day.
I would have said, if we were talking about gay dudes hanging on a pier, and I'm like, that's a queer pier. You're like, don't say that. I'm going to have to edit that out. And
well, no, that's what they called, the neighborhood called it that. So James.
The gay dudes might have called it that. Yeah, like, you go there to.
Yeah, they probably did. Because James
was. To twerk or something.
He was an openly gay construction manager. And he frequented this spot because this is the early 80s. It's before. Like right before the AIDS epidemic really hit. And at this time, there were really no gay bars. There was nowhere for gay men to meet each other, to hang out. So they had to find places and kind of designate them as spots for gay men to meet each other. So after.
I'm picturing in my mind, which says he's a construction worker, mm-hmm. I'm picturing like everyone up there, like doing the YMCA together.
No. Well, he was a construction manager, so I don't know if that means
young men.
Okay. So, anyway, this is where he would meet, you know, guys to mess around with and hang out with. So, police, they didn't determine a clear motive, but they labeled it a robbery, despite the fact that James' wallet was found still in his jeans a few feet from his body. So, the fact that they designated a robbery is really weird to me. It makes no sense.
You sound like idiots.
So, up until the night of the 22nd, when detectives came across Billy hotboxing in his car, there were no solid leads. And in a town that's heavily dependent on tourist revenue, an unsolved murder was bad for business. So they needed to get to the bottom of this ASAP because, you know, no tourists wanted to come to a place with an unsolved crime, an unsolved murder.
Really?
Yeah, really.
I wouldn't care. A lot of people go to San Francisco and there's tons of serial killers that was there.
Well, they wanted to get it solved and off the books. They didn't want to have a cold case on their hands, so they just... You know, kind of.
I know what you're saying. That's idiotic. Because there's unsolved crimes in every part of the world. So you might as well just stay home then, dummy.
Well, a few days after they initially questioned Billy in the car, police received a tip. A 56-year-old man named John Parker called in after seeing news coverage of the murder. He said that he was in the Canova Beach parking lot around 1:30 in the morning on the 17th. He was there, like other men who frequented the park after hours, to find a man to mess around with. But all of a sudden, a man starts walking really fast out of the woods near the park, and he was wearing a yellow t-shirt that was stained with blood. He came up to John's truck, and he said, "I'm Jim. Can you give me a ride down to the bar down the street?"
Hell no.
John asked him about the blood, and Jim said, "Look, I just got into a bar fight. I'm going back to that bar. I need to clear some things up, but I was just in a fight with these guys. No big deal." And this excuse seemed reasonable enough to John. It was 1:30 in the morning. The guy didn't seem too crazy, and he believed it.
Maybe he thought he was attractive, and he was like, a little blood will wash off.
Well, as soon as Jim got into the car, John offered him $20 to have oral sex with him, and Jim did.
Oh, he's a hooker.
So the next morning, when John went back out to his truck, he noticed the yellow bloodstained t-shirt his boy toy was wearing was now on the floor of the passenger side of the car. When he picked it up, he noticed the words "Surfeit" in bold letters across the front. John turned the shirt over to police, so now they have a shirt with blood on it, but they have no one. Like, who does the shirt belong to?
Did they have DNA back then?
No. So,
DNA shop, that was the first year. That's the year the dude was born that's opening the DNA shop.
You're the dude.
I'm the dude. DNA shop, 24-hour turnaround. We're going to get our technology better, and we'll be able to do it in 2 hours soon.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, sometimes you are thrown curveballs in your life. Russ and I can definitely attest to that. There have been a few times in my life where I didn't know which way to turn or what steps to take to improve my mindset. When I started therapy in 2020, it dramatically helped me. It helped me get through really tough times. It helped me understand who I am and the things I need. So if you've been thinking about starting therapy, definitely give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. So visit BetterHelp.com/wifeofcrime1 today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/wifeofcrime1. So one name kept coming up. They kept hearing about this kid, Billy Wild Bill Dillon. Billy was big and muscular and apparently told crazy stories about hitting on gay men, leading them on, and then beating them up.
Oh, shit.
As a way to prove their manhood, unfortunately, this was a common thing back then amongst late teens and early 20-year-old men to prove that they were not gay. Although this had been done...
You know how you prove you're not gay?
How?
You don't have sex with a man.
Well, although this had been done by many guys in Billy's peer group, no one had ever claimed to see Billy actually beat up a gay guy. So most of these stories were probably just embellished by Billy himself. He probably just made up these stories of, you know, beating these dudes up.
You got to be careful mess with them gay dudes. Because when I was growing up, there was two gay dudes on my block, and they'll whoop you. Them gay dudes, I guess they were very flexible. They hit you from all
Whatever.
Angles.
Whatever. They also can fight because they probably got ridiculed for years.
Yeah, no, they fuck you up.
And they can fight.
One of the gay dudes beat up this dude that used to bother me all the time, and he whooped him up and down the block.
Well, there you go. Good for him. He defended you.
No, he didn't do it for that reason. He did it for his own reason.
Oh, okay. So these stories were never proven. It was just something that Billy used to, you know, talk about that he would do. But no one had ever seen him do it. No one ever seen him beat up any gay men. But there's one character flaw that Billy had that stuck out to a lot of people. Billy was a gigantic asshole. He was like the quintessential, athletic, good-looking, arrogant jerk-off. Like typical, you know...
What they would say jock. Is a jock.
Yeah.
If you were watching like a movie from the 80s, the jock, he would look like Biff from Back to the Future.
Yeah. Like,
but probably handsome, because that Biff was a funny looking dude.
Yeah, like a jock dude who was hot and he had talent and he knew it and he wanted everyone else to know it. But he really was talented because he got signed by the Detroit Tigers. So when detectives question people about his character, many people happily divulged all of his flaws and his faults and talked about how big of a jerk he was and about all these stories that he used to tell about beating up gay guys. So police are really getting suspicious.
That's
now.
Some insecure shit.
Exactly. It's very insecure.
Yeah, go pick on someone else that'll, well, not that they won't fight back. Like I told you, the gay dudes I know how to fight good.
Yeah, but it is a very insecure thing to do.
Yeah.
So when detectives mentioned it to a few people, they claimed to remember Billy sporting a yellow t-shirt with the word surfeit on the front.
Billy gave a $20 holla blowjob.
No, they just said they remembered him wearing that shirt. But it doesn't mean it was actually Billy.
So this brings us. I don't know. This is fishy.
This brings us back to the interrogation room. Okay. After failing the first question, where were you on the night
I have a question.
Of August 17th?
Why would they say he's wearing a yellow surf shirt? Did the public know that or they just said it?
No, they're just questioning random people who knew
him.
And
they're saying we saw him wore a yellow
And they're
shirt.
Like, hey, who's this Billy guy? And then they're like, oh yeah, he's this dude.
No, I'm talking about the shirt. Only
yeah,
the shirt.
And then after questioning him for a little bit, they're like, did you see this guy wearing a shirt that says surfeit on it? And they're like, yeah, maybe. I think I saw him wearing that. It was very casual.
But I wonder if they said, did you see what he was wearing that day?
Oh, no, I don't know about that.
Yeah,
because
if they said that and they said a yellow surf shirt, then he's was the $20 holla guy.
Well, so let's just keep talking about it. So police asked more questions, okay? But they kept the interview very light and cordial and no big deal because they didn't want Billy to think that they're, you know, he's a number one suspect, so he would talk more. So the entire event went exactly like Billy thought it would go. It was simple questions just to clear his name, and he just got out of there. No big deal. The police brought Billy in a few more times for questioning, and Billy cooperated. Despite his family's growing apprehension and request for him to obtain a lawyer, he didn't. He kept saying, "I didn't do anything. Why do I need a lawyer?" But his family really wanted him to get one. He never did. Then, as part of the interrogation, police hired a man named John Preston. He was a scent tracking dog expert. Preston's dog, Harris, linked the bloody t-shirt to the blood from the body. And then, in a paper test, quote unquote, the dog sniffed the shirt and then sniffed a piece of paper that Billy had touched. And this, you know, made John Preston believe that the dog identified Billy as the person who wore the shirt, because the dog matched the two together.
This doesn't seem very scientific, but dogs do smell good.
They have
a good sense of smell.
Yeah.
Dogs don't smell good. Our dogs stink sometimes.
Well, this, what, you didn't mean it like that.
I know, but you said it. You said dogs smell good. You repeated it. And I was like, well, they don't really smell good.
Okay. So this was the end of the investigation. Billy was then arrested for first-degree murder.
With no evidence.
With no evidence.
That's crazy, bro.
So at the trial, prosecutors presented four witnesses. I'm going to go through them really quick. The first witness was Billy's former girlfriend. She testified that she was with him on the night of the crime, and she said she saw him standing over the victim's body wearing a yellow t-shirt. The second was the dog handler, John Preston. He, you know, testified to what his dog found and how he matched them. The third is John Parker, the guy who picked up the hitchhiker. He testified that Billy was the man he picked up.
Oh, shit.
And fourth was a jailhouse snitch who said Billy admitted to it while in jail awaiting trial.
I never believe jailhouse snitches because...
Yeah, they're always in it for themselves.
Yeah, like if you're in jail, you're just going to be like, whatever, he did it. Let me out a little sooner or give me cookies.
It's true. So, yeah, I don't ever believe jailhouse snitches either. Although there have been a few cases where this jailhouse snitch was actually right. I think in the Atlanta child murders, they had a jailhouse snitch who, something like, I can't remember.
But how do you know?
It was on the Mindhunter.
It's probably so close to like 50-50 that it's like, how could you even take their word?
I know. I don't know.
Because they only have stuff to gain from this.
It's true. I mean, we did do a case though. I don't remember what case it was. We've done so many. But one of the cases we did a few weeks back, there was a jailhouse snitch who told the truth. I don't remember which one it was. So Billy also took the stand at his own defense, like in his own defense at his trial, saying that he was miles away from the beach and he had witness statements corroborating his alibi.
He said he didn't know where he was that day.
Well, after, you know, having months to prepare and having a lawyer who probably a defense attorney who probably investigated this for him, they got statements from witnesses to corroborate his alibi. But after a 5-day trial, he was sentenced to life in prison. Less than 2 weeks after the trial, his ex-girlfriend, the one that said that she saw him standing over the body, she recanted her testimony. It was later found out that her and one of the police sergeants were sleeping together.
Oh, maybe she was sleeping with the police sergeant because he was the dude that's going to jail is gay.
Well, no.
And he gave the blowjob.
No, he didn't. I'm about to tell you that wasn't true either.
Oh.
So now, it also came out that, you know, the guy, John Parker, he was blind in one eye. Okay?
Did he originally wear a patch?
I don't know if he wore a patch or not, but originally he told...
But you should if you're blind.
You need to, but he shouldn't. I don't know if you're allowed to drive if you're blind in one eye, so I don't know. But anyway,
look like a pirate, probably.
He was blind, completely blind in one eye, and he originally told police that the hitchhiker that he picked up, that guy was 6 foot tall with a mustache, and this guy is 6 foot four, and he was too young to grow a full mustache. So it was shown that his testimony was pretty, like, it didn't have...
Wait, so he couldn't grow facial hair?
He couldn't grow facial hair, and he was 6'4", and the guy said the hitchhiker was a guy who was 6 foot tall with a mustache. So that kind of threw that eyewitness testimony into question. And then it also came out later that prosecutors doubted the reliability of the scent dog, the scent sniffing dog.
Yeah.
But they just went along with it anyway, even though they doubted that it was actually accurate.
Well, prosecutors are just there for a conviction. They don't care if something's accurate. It's almost like a game that they want to win.
Exactly.
So, I guess it looks good on their reputation if they win more cases than they lose. I don't know if they keep score, like what your batting average is or something.
I don't know. But it turns out that with the girlfriend recanting the statement, the dog evidence being kind of a sham, the dude who picked up the hitchhiker being blind in one eye and the description not matching Dylan.
I don't think blind in one eye has to do with anything, because I just closed my eye when you were talking and you still look exactly the same.
Well, I don't know. Maybe
he... And I had a friend who had one eye. Well, it was like kind of messed up. It got worse. And he still used to drive.
Oh, okay.
And he ended up wearing a patch.
Oh.
I always thought it looked weird, though.
Well, this guy gave a description that didn't match Billy Dylan. So, anyway, less than an hour after being in prison, Billy was gang raped. And he considered committing suicide right away. Because now he's sentenced to life.
Less than an hour?
Less than an hour after being in prison.
That's crazy.
He contemplated suicide many times, but he just kept hearing a voice inside of him saying, keep going, keep fighting, keep fighting. So Billy filed several appeals in the first 5 years following his conviction, but all of them were denied. Okay. Then he kind of came to grips with his fate and he was like, okay, if this is where I'm going to be forever, this is where I'm going to be. And I just have to deal with it. But he maintained his innocence the entire time and he continued to ask for DNA testing, especially after DNA testing came out and the science got more evolved and it, you know.
Oh, yeah. Now test that joint.
So then in 2007, with help from public defenders and the Innocence Project of Florida, Billy Dylan again requested DNA testing, and this time they tested the t-shirt. They found DNA from the victim and an unknown male, but zero DNA from Billy Dylan.
So he's innocent.
So he was innocent.
I wasn't sure until this point.
Well, based on the results, he was released on November 18th, 2008, and finally exonerated on December 10th, 2008, after spending 27 years behind bars.
Wow, who knows? He could have been like a famous baseball player or something.
I know, how terrible. Damn, sad. Billy.
And they said you're giving blowjobs for $20 too. They tried to ruin your reputation.
Yeah, they tried to ruin his reputation. He missed out on opportunity. It's really sad. But
even though you're a dick.
Right now, well, he was a 21-year-old jockey.
I don't care if you're 12.
Arrogant jerk. I mean, that's a lot of them are jerks.
If you're 12 years old, don't be a dick. Like, it doesn't matter your age, just don't be a dick.
That's true.
Hashtag don't be a dick. Put it on the gram.
So Wife now,
of Crime Pod on Instagram. Hashtag don't be a dick.
So Billy now lives with his long-term girlfriend to this day. He plays music. He actually just sang the Star Spangled Banner at one of the MLB games. I don't know which one it was. I have to look it up.
Really?
Yeah, he's like, he plays golf every day. He works a regular job. He's just like a, you know, because he was exonerated, so he's no longer a felon. He's probably like
40 years old or so. Right?
No, he's 50-something.
Oh, he's 50-something.
He spent 27 years in jail.
Oh, because in 81, he was a 20, yeah, he was going to play baseball in 81.
Yeah.
All right, I mixed it up. I thought he was, never mind, just go ahead.
So, The question now, though, unfortunately, because we can focus on this exoneration and it's a really good exoneration case, but what really happened to James Dvorak?
Who murdered him on the night of
August 17th? What?
I bet no one cares at this point. Not no one.
Yeah, I'm sure his family cares.
No, his family. When I say no one, I mean people that can catch him.
Oh, the cops?
Yeah, they're probably like, whatever. That case was
so long ago, and whoever was working on that case is retired, and there's like no new leads, and if that DNA doesn't match someone's DNA that they have, or I don't know the database they keep, I mean, maybe they could outsource to the DNA shop.
Well, I have the answer, because some people actually did care, and they looked into it.
Oh, shit, like the ladies from Don't Fuck With Cats.
Well, no, it was police. It was special investigators with the sheriff's department. They ended up reopening the case after Billy Dillon got exonerated. And they found out that there were four men that the Brevard County Sheriff's Department concluded had killed James. It was discovered that all four men's names were on a tip sheet. So, like, a lot of times when you get tips, when investigators get tips in the police discovery and stuff, you'll see like tip sheets. We're like, let's check out this guy, this name, this name, this name. And some, you know, a bunch of names that they need to look into.
Like leads.
Mm-hmm. So these four men's names were on the same tip sheet as Billy Dillon. But clearly, they honed in on Billy and didn't continue to look at all of these other four men. So they never followed up on them. And it wasn't until one of the men named Philip Huff confessed that he, along with James Johnstone and Eric and Daryl Novak, beat James Dvorak to death. Johnstone's DNA was then found on the t-shirt. So they took his DNA, they compared it to the DNA, the unknown male on the t-shirt, and it was a match.
Did they say why they did it?
Yeah, so they were all hanging out. These four guys were at the Canova Beach Park, and just hanging out, smoking weed. They weren't there looking to have sex with anyone. They were just there hanging out. Meanwhile, James was there to, like, rendezvous. He met up with them, and they all started smoking weed together. James Johnstone and James Dvorak, they went off together, and the other two guys saw them messing around in the woods. So they were messing around in the woods, and I guess James, the one that committed the crime, he, like, his friends didn't know that he was into it. And he claimed that James Dvorak was sexually assaulting him.
He got caught with his pants down.
So they all beat him up and killed him. And then James Johnstone, the one wearing the yellow shirt, came out of the woods covered in blood. And that's when the other dude picked him up.
Wow.
So now,
you think after an event like that, then someone tries to give you $20, like, you'd think you'd be like, nah, I'm like,
yeah, he must be a psycho.
That's crazy. That's like some real
psycho shit.
Yeah, like you're compartmentalizing different things that are happening in your life. You're just separating them, so like in a box. Like, I don't know the
like
right
you word. Literally just killed someone.
Yeah.
And now you're coming out of the woods and you give a blowjob to a dude who offers you $20.
And for only
and you're
20,
covered in the dude's blood that you just killed.
And it's only $20. It's definitely an offer you can refuse.
It's true.
It isn't like he was like, hey, I got $1 million if you suck a dick. Like, it was like a little money.
It's crazy that people can actually do that. It's sick, to be honest. So now, the evidence and confession was turned over to a special prosecutor who claimed that he was unable to charge the men. He said that there was that the statute of limitations had expired and the four men remain free to
today?
This day.
Wow.
Unfortunately, though, they're in their 50s.
Oh, they're 50s, not old 60s. As shit.
Unfortunately, life isn't great for these men because sometimes the universe must collect on unpaid debts. So two of the men have been in and out of jail numerous times, multiple drug charges, and are currently on drug probation today. Daryl Novak sat on his mother's back porch and on September 11th, 2019, last year, put a Beretta handgun to his temple and pulled the trigger.
Good.
But sadly, after James Johnstone...
Piece of shit, your mom had to clean that up.
But after James Johnstone learned of his DNA matching the one on the t-shirt, he stopped cooperating, and his last known whereabouts are in Illinois, where he may be to this day. No one ever heard from him again.
Damn.
So while, like I said, this was like an amazing exoneration story for Billy Dillon, it's an incredibly sad story for this man, James Dvorak, who was murdered and no one's ever paid for it. And the man who did pay for it ended up being innocent, and now there's been no justice for him.
Yeah, and now all that happens is people just talk about it on podcasts.
It's really sad. So that's the story of the exoneration of Billy Dillon and the murder of James Dvorak.
Interesting story. I never heard that. I mean, I never hear any of this, but
yeah,
good stuff.
I thought you might like some of the baseball references. I know it was only in the beginning, but
yeah, you led me on. I thought we were gonna have a little baseball almanac.
I just think it's crazy though that they can't do any. Like, these people are just living their life after they did this to this poor man.
I didn't think there was statute of limitations on murder.
I didn't either.
I thought it was like on, I don't know, if you stole baseball cards.
Like you did.
No, I don't steal.
Well, I didn't know that either. I was really surprised when I read that, because I thought for a murder, like murder charges, it has no limitation. So I don't know all the laws about that and all the rules.
It doesn't make sense. Think about this. Like, say, for instance, like the Golden State Killer. They found him 20 years later after killing all those people.
I know.
So what's so
different? What's different about this? I don't know.
Well, if any of you know, hit us up on Instagram under the story and let us know. I'm kind of curious.
Yeah,
and
I don't really know why.
Wife of Crime Pod.
I can keep investigating this and like look into it and maybe try to find answers, but I don't get it. And I read multiple sources who, even the sources I read, said for reasons we still don't understand, the special prosecutor refused to prosecute this crime.
Sounds like one of those things where like they're related to someone.
I don't know. It's weird. It's fishy. So that's this week's story. I hope you all had a good week, and I hope you guys continue to have a good week and a decent quarantine, even though we're all just stuck in our homes.
Yeah, but go for a jog. Throw your headphones on, go for a little jog, a little 30-minute, get out the house, stay fit, stay alive. Well, for some of you, stay fat, don't get kidnapped. I didn't make that up.
One of our listeners made that up.
No, she's always funny.
She's really funny. All right, guys, have a wonderful week. We'll talk soon.
Bye. Check out wifeofcrime.com and say what up. Peace.